Clementine Juamaria was 6 years old when her mother and father began to speak in whispers, when neighbors began to disappear, and when she heard the loud, ugly sounds her brother said were thunder. In 1994, she and her 15-year-old sister, Claire, fled the Rwandan massacre and spent the next 6 years migrating through 7 African countries, searching for safety, perpetually hungry, imprisoned, and abused, enduring and escaping refugee camps, finding unexpected kindness, witnessing inhuman cruelty. They did not know whether their parents were dead or alive. When Clementine was 12, she and her sister were granted refugee status in the United States of America. She writes about this experience in her new book, The Girl Who Smiled Beads, A Story of War and What Comes After. It is a great pleasure to welcome Clementine Juamaria to the roundtable this morning. Clementine, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here.
What brought you to want to tell the story, living through what you lived through and knowing the story of wanting to share it with people around you and then obviously to the public at large?
Well, one, I could not believe that what had happened. I was in eighth grade when I was learning about all the atrocities that happened around the world, wars. Once I learned about the Civil War and learned about the Holocaust and learned about all these different genocides that have taken place before my country, Rwanda, I was just a teenager, baffled, absolutely confused. But then I realized that I was not reading any book that shared what my sister and I, my older sister Claire and I, had lived through. And so I really just wanted to give people a context of a life of a person seeking refuge. I don't think people know what that means, a life of a person seeking refuge. But most important, a life of somebody, teenager and a child, trying to find a place to call home, trying to find a place to have peace and to just not die. And so that is one reason why I wrote The Girl Who Smiled Beads. But the other reason was to really expand imagination of what our world could be. Because I believe that, you know, when I look around, there's many of us that are stuck in silent stories of different abuses. And war, one of them, war is an abuse. And I just wanted to relieve those people who've gone through wars and those people who are seeking refuge to have the freedom to own their story and write about that story. That's why.
In 1994, you are 6 years old. Your 15-year-old sister and you have to flee Rwanda very suddenly. You have almost nothing. How did you get from that moment to where you are now? Because it is obviously a very long road. And I guess the ultimate question is, how do you know where you're going, and how do you then know when you're there?
Well, I had Claire. Claire is one of those women who knows her way and knows of her dignity. And going from one country to another, we found people. We found people who share. We found people who welcome. We found people who really wanted to be a part of our journey. And that's how we moved from one place to another. The way I always, you know, said it a while ago, it was, every country had stationed angels ready to welcome us, ready to take us in. Even though, in terms of the political climate or just economical climate of wherever we were, was not very welcoming, you know, of us. Because if you are traveling from one country to another with no papers, you have to cross the border. You don't have money, right? And so it was really through the kindness of people that we moved from one place to another. But it was also through the imagination and the strong will of my sister Claire that we moved from one place to another.
over a six-year period of time, you went through seven different African countries.
Mm-hmm.
Hunger, fear, and as you say, your sister saved you again and again. By the time you're 12, it's 2000, and your sister gets asylum in the United States. And then that becomes a whole new journey.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's not just only fear, hunger, and lost, but the opposite of that, too. You know, once you, you know, grab yourself the book and you read, you see that. And being in the United States, Chicago was our first city to be able to start this, to be able to embark on this new journey. And, you know, Claire and I had a both very opposite life. But what we both, you know, knew is that we had a people to cater to, but also we had a people who were catering to us. And so, you know, Chicago and my American life for the past 17 years are completely the opposite, but also not the opposite as well. And so I'm here just trying to connect those dots.
The title is The Girl Who Smiled Beads. You tell us that that was a story that your nanny told you about the girl who smiled beads. Why did you feel that that was a good title for your story?
So The Girl Who Smiled Beads, it's a Rwandan fairy tale, or tale, you should say, Umugani. And it's like the Alice in Wonderland of my country. But my nanny allowed me to add on to it. And so Rwandans, you know, have their version. I have my version because my nanny would say, and then what happens next? You know, not so far from here, there was this thing. And so she told me so many stories. And one of that story, we finished it together, but I did not like the end. And so I continued on. And in my head as a child, that's the story that I use as a framework to relate to a world that was so confusing, right? So almost unreal. But it also is a story that has worked for me. I add on. I'm not frozen into a perception that I'm a girl without a parent. I'm not frozen into an ideology that I'm a girl without papers. And I'm not frozen into an ideology that I'm a girl without resources. You know, it's this girl who smiled beads where I, my heartbeat and my breath and my smile, that's the currency. That's the most valuable thing. And so, and Claire is the actor of The Girl Who Smiled Beads. She showed me how to own our lives and live as human, beautiful, and free from all ideology that does not allow, and experiences that does not allow someone to be in their freedom and their given heartbeat and breath.
You and Claire, and you write about this, lived in several refugee camps in Burundi and Tanzania, Malawi, Mozambique.
Yeah.
What is the day-to-day reality like for the two of you in those situations?
You know, the reality in refugee camps, and many people, about 70 million people are in it right now as we speak. It's a reality that I would not wish for anybody. The reality where you learn skills that you don't even thought that you needed. How to go fetch water. How to start a fire. How to measure a portion of your food throughout the month. It's absolutely the most, if that is a story, right? Let's say if that life is a story, that is the most insane, inhumane story that human could come up with. I will never subject anyone on that story. I will never in my life as a storyteller. That is not a life that I wish for anybody, when you do not have medicine. And the day-to-day life is, you're frozen. You're really frozen because you're thinking about your home. Your home, everybody has been either been killed. Everything that you know has been burned or lost. Everybody that you know has been lost or killed. You are living in almost an even ground. And let's not talk about the hunger. I remember when I wrote about my first time writing this in my high school about living in a refugee camp. I said, you know, one, you are lost among lost. And then two, it's as if your mind is really chained to your stomach and that it does not go anywhere. You are just thinking about how hungry you are all day long. You're thinking about how hot it is or how cold it is. And you don't even have anything to protect you from the cold or the heat. The diseases are just scattered everywhere. But you know what's really crazy? Just a few blocks away, just like 30 minutes away, it's a city, people living a life like we're living here. Just a flight, maybe 18-hour flight away, you're in Chicago, you know? And so I really wanted to expose that in writing about this. I really wanted to give people the reality. And I can't do justice on the interview to talk about it. And this is why I'm encouraging everyone to really read the book. Because in the book, I also give more of my emotions because it was a very intimate experience writing it.
When you're in the United States for a few years, you have a wonderful experience. You're taken in and treated like a daughter by an American family living in the suburbs of Chicago. Yeah. You write an essay for the Oprah Winfrey Show, and ultimately you are reunited with your parents on Oprah. I don't know how I would feel about that. There was a moment of that it must have been beautiful and yet also somewhat obtrusive, I would think, somewhat violating to have people share in that moment. You write about it beautifully, and especially your sister's reaction. What was it like when that happens?
It was everything that you say. Whatever you felt about it, if you have watched it, that's what it was to you. You know, I'm giving it, we share on the news about wars, right? But we've never shared a reunion. And that reunion is a trigger point for so many people to remember this separation in which it's been caused by wars, by hate. And so whatever it is that the audience feel, I honor that. The viewer, I honor your perspective. My perspective was, I was so in my highest, highest joy. And at the same time, I was so confused. I was so confused. When you think about it, we thought our family was dead for 7 years. We found that they were alive. And this was in 2001, where you used to use those scratch calls, which took so much money from everyone, including my family, but only to talk to them for 15 minutes. And what do you say to somebody that you thought they were dead for 7 years? For me, at least, I said nothing, and I ran away. My sister was just the one who was brave to be able to do and speak. And then 12 years later, here they're on the front of me. And then I spent 3 days with them. I felt like it was such... It's one of those moments where it just reminds me to never separate people. And if that's a lesson that I had to learn about humanity, it's a very painful one. Mm-hmm. It's a very painful one. But I'm grateful. I'm so grateful that the team was able to do that. But at the same time, I was like, we cannot do that to our humanity. Not the reunion. The reunion needs to happen, right? But to separate families.
Right.
So that's what wars does, you know. Wars does that. Right after the show, this beautiful woman who survived the Holocaust, she came to me and held my hand, and she was in tears. And she said, you know, probably maybe 70, early 80s, and she said, I've been waiting for this moment my whole life because I was never reunited with my family. I don't know what happened to them. And for me, that is the take, being like, that moment was for her to settle her mind, to settle the dream in which she had this happening in front of her.
But of course, it's your reality as well. And you talk about the time right after. I mean, you're on the show and you become entertainment for a moment. And then you're left with what is left. And you go into a green room. And as you say, you can't just staple your family together again. But what are the next days and years like in working on reestablishing that relationship with these people that you once loved so much and then are separated from and then are reunited with?
You know, it's one of those tricky things. It's not until it happens to you, you know, the emotions impact of it. You know, looking at my mother, looking at my father, I'm like, who are these people? But yes, it was entertainment, right? It was entertainment, the pure entertainment, but it was a reality. That was the most reality thing you could possibly put on television. But that was also the most entertaining thing because people felt. That day, people felt everything that we felt. Anywhere I go in the world, through Germany, through Australia, to different parts of Africa, people watch that day.
Yeah.
What they felt, okay, times three in my body. Times three in my mind. And after that day, I learned the power of storytelling. How powerful it is to tell that story. But it was just only like a few minutes, like maybe 5 minutes, right? But our whole life and the separation was 12 years. And the story begins with my mom and dad, you know, creating our family, right? And so after that, I just really wanted to write. I really wanted to tell a story. And I really wanted to tell the silent story. Stories that people don't know, but they're just only, it's glossed over. And so for me, that moment just gave me opportunity to just speak about what happened in Rwanda and to speak about what happened in the war. Rwanda, Burundi, Congo, right? Those are the three countries that are so rich in mind and so rich in everything. But our human value has been really distorted and really subjected to so much hate. And we need to stop that. We need to be aware of each other. And so that reunion, it's an open door for people to talk about their family.
Do you talk about what happened in Rwanda with your sister or with your parents?
Never. I don't. Because it's close home. And you have to remember, I was a child.
Right.
And so there is, it's for me trying to patch up the memory and experiences. And we talk about the joys right? But we don't talk about the people we've lost along the way and also in the war. And so that's why I talk about it, so that it's not taboo. You know, as I said earlier, war, such as mass killing as a genocide, it is a form of abuse. It's in the highest and the most strongest abuse to our humanity. And for me to even just talk about it and to look at the terms that describe it and the aftermath of it, it allows people to start adding words to their own emotions about it. You see, out of all the people in Rwanda, everybody's trying to find words. Everybody's trying to organize the emotions and the words. And I'm looking forward in the next, you know, hundreds of years of us talking about not only what happened to us, but talking about how in Rwanda people live together, right? You blocks away, someone who killed your family lives there. And every day you mend, we do not put our history under a rug and shove it. In Rwanda, people are living together. They're staring at each other. They're mending. They're working through it. And that is what reconciliation means. And that is what it means to be a human, forgiving each other. And so I cannot wait for the voices of forgiveness that comes from a place of joy and peace and love to take over. And it's not just only Rwanda. It's Iraq. It's Afghanistan. It's America. It's all over Europe. Wars have taken over our human story. And we need to stop that through with our connection point, what makes us alive.
At the age of 12, you're granted refugee status in the United States. You go on to receive a BA in comparative literature from Yale University.
Yes.
Which is just is such a beautiful part of the story. And I promised myself I wasn't going to ask you about this, but I feel like I have to, because God knows we talk about Donald Trump too much. But what, just what you just said, I mean, so war, yes, and let's all pray that we can stop that someday. But if we can't, then we still have the people who are affected by it. And why are we setting up in a world where people are fearful of those who
yeah.
are trying to come to some place where there is not war, and what we do by putting up walls, whether physical or virtual,
emotional, mentally. You know, honestly, this is why I wrote The Girl Who Smiled Beads, because I don't know that people know what it really means to be in a war. Majority of our leaders all over the world do not know what it means to be under bombs being thrown on top of you, walking for days and days seeking refuge, right? And so I wrote the book to give context not only to just regular citizens, but leaders of our world, and to be able to entice them to understand their feelings about war, their feelings about people seeking refuge. And also, yes, the people who've sought refuge all over the world, they're about to lead us in a world of peace. Because we know what it means to not feel wanted. We see eyes, we are hearing everything, you know, we are not deaf. Everybody's watching the news worldwide, not being wanted, not being needed. and when they're needed, because they're needed for economic reasons. For me, I wanted to approach on the human side of war, not the political, not the economical, right? Not even the anthropological side of things. I wanted to approach it from a human, me to you, me to you. Cut out all the things in the middle. I am speaking to you as Clementine. My agenda, you know what's my agenda? To share my story with you, to be able to allow you to connect to your reality. How is your reality and my reality connected? And what are these connections? What are the opportunities? What are the opportunities connection rather than thinking what is the issue? Every issue now is going to be turned into an opportunity and possibility and curiosity. You see, fear is a lack of imagination and lack of curiosity. But for many of us who have come through wars for hundreds of years, we are about to come, and we're about to come with love, with so much love, so that we can feel peace and so that we could be in our joy. But the idea of the girl who smiled beads, it reminds us our value is not what's beneath us, such as natural resources above us, such as whatever it is in our mind, right? But it's through our smile. It's through our joy. So thank you for asking that, even though I'm all about humanity. And there's no political ideology without people. And there's no economical ideology in the practice without people. But I want to go back to, not go back, I want to get excited about being human, and human being the one who are in control of their own powers and their own resources, not other way around.
Well, it's a beautiful story, and one that just so resonates, and hopefully will continue to. It's The Girl Who Smiled Beads, a story of war and what comes after. Clementine Womaria, I thank you very much for spending time and sharing the story with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking time. And I'm just so excited for this book to be all over the world in all languages, just as a tool to educate us on how to not fear each other, but to take that fear to turn it to curiosity and opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing. Again, the name of the book is The Girl Who Smiled Beads, A Story of War and What Comes After. Clementine Womaria is the author. It's published by Crown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.